I mean, it's all along the due diligence path. And I think what we've found from our perspective is making sure that you understand where your utilities are, because sometimes they're not marked correctly on the survey. Call and verify your utilities before you take the title for face value. That would probably be the biggest thing I'd do at this point. Now, I'll preface that and say my actual dirt experience is limited at this point to this fund. So I don't have a long history there, but that's definitely one lesson I would pass along today.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Corey Sylvester with DXD Capital. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. You know, the same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started JP Morgan back when I graduated from college, originally doing credit underwriting, got into picking stocks, started a company called Union Real Time with a couple other fellows about 6 years ago. That developed into a company called Radius Plus, which is a self-storage and data analytics platform that the industry uses now. And from that, you know, was really exposed to how development works, why it's, you know, so attractive, the industry itself. And about 18 months ago, started DXD Capital with a couple other partners. And we are building 14 facilities in our pipeline right now, 3 under construction. Yeah, that's a quick synopsis.
Wow, that's a lot of moving parts. Let's back up here a little bit about Radius Plus. That's not a platform or a technology I'm familiar with. What is that?
Radius Plus is a website that you can go to if you're a self-storage operator, developer, acquirer. The kind of the package that we created is we were the first and only group to figure out where every facility is, a self-storage facility that is, exactly how big it is, tracking all the rates, where all the new developments are occurring. And it's basically just a platform that allows somebody to come with a location or a existing facility and educate themselves about, all right, what does the current supply look like? What is the pipeline of new supply look like? What have the history of rates been? You know, allows them to really educate themselves on everything that's happening in and around that area. And that was really the first foray into storage.
Wow. Okay. That's really cool. What gave you the idea that said, hey, this is missing in the market, particularly in the storage market, to launch and build that?
Union Real Time, when we started it, we were taking our buy-side skills of investment analysis and trying to combine that with a technology platform to consolidate the data needed to make investment decisions. So the first industry that I looked at in that endeavor was just self-storage. Someone said, hey, you should take a look at this industry. There looks to be like there's a lot of development occurring. This was in 2015. The genesis was we were doing research on the self-storage industry, the public REITs namely, saw that there was a ton of development occurring that the stocks were not pricing any of it in. And so that set itself up as a cyclical short thesis. And so that was the original idea, as we went to hedge funds and said, hey, there's an industry here. The self-storage industry is at a cyclical peak. The earnings estimates don't integrate that into forward-looking numbers. So there's a short opportunity here. We originally got into self-storage by saying you should short the stocks. But the process in which we were undertaking to do the analysis, we knew that there was, for instance, like 4 million square feet in Denver, but we didn't have a high degree of conviction around what's the installed base in Denver. Because as we did the research, we realized no one had ever figured out where every facility is exactly and exactly how big it is. And through that process, we discovered, hey, this data set doesn't exist. And learning more about the industry and how developers function, we saw that there was an opportunity. Hey, we have the technical expertise to figure out where every facility is. Let's do that, integrate that into a platform, you know, completely shift gears and create an analytics platform for the self-storage industry itself. So never thought I'd be here type of dynamic, but that's how we got into self-storage.
18 months ago or 2 years ago, you guys said, not only are we going to run an analytics platform, but we are also going, because you now see opportunity, which, how did that shift happen? Because I would think if in 2015, you discovered that, hey, there's a great opportunity to short because you think that the stock prices of self-storage companies are going down, and now you're building 14 facilities.
Now I'm part of the problem, right?
I mean, that seems counterintuitive.
the short thesis ended up working. If you look at where the stocks peaked in 2016, that's when they peaked. The beta at which they fell. So I came from the semiconductor industry in terms of doing that analysis. And if you had a 30% decline in rates and semiconductors, the stocks would go down 80%, right? Hmm. The same dynamic we thought was in effect with self-storage, and spot rates in some of these areas did decline, you know, 40, 50%. The internal dynamic of storage, though, buffered the industry from that same sort of decline. Like, the stocks did decline, but the magnitude of that decline was not as much as we originally thought. And that's because if I have a self-storage facility, it's 85% occupied. From that standpoint, you know, I have existing tenants that I'm going to continue to raise rents on. And they're sticky. They don't want to move. And so you have this dynamic where you have these in-place guys that you continue to raise rents on, while the churn makes you infill new customers at much lower rates. The net impact to the bottom line has a much lower delta than we're used to. And so that's a long way of saying, like, it's a great business model. And so once I discovered and really understood that, call it 4 years ago, was when we started thinking, how can we kind of take development to the next level? And the way that development works today is, we realized, you know, instead of starting with a location and then figuring out, you know, that's what Radius does. They come to the platform with a location, let's start with a location. How do we reverse engineer that and figure out, like, where the hotspots are? Where's the opportunity to develop self-storage? The process we thought could be shifted on its head. And so 4 years ago, we started creating that technology. And that's really where the idea for DXD came. It took me 2-3 years to find the right team and to actually find people that are willing to take a chance on us, because it's a big endeavor to raise money and to ask people to trust you when you have no track record. That's how we got into it.
Because now you've reverse engineered this, you have the front seat to where the opportunities lie based on the data set that you've created. And you say, hey, wait, we're missing things here. Let's go build there. Is that right?
Yeah. If you think about storage, like, the rates change like airline rates, right? So your rate is a function of supply and demand in real time. Like, if you were to look at a Christmas Eve flight across the country, the price is really high. You can indicate that there's a lot of demand for that seat, right? So storage works in that same fashion, where if you have a 10 by 10 rate that's going for $260, generally speaking, that's an indication of high demand relative to supply. And so using that kind of premise as your guiding principle, you can figure out where there are mismatches of supply and demand. And self-storage being a 3-mile market, give or take, you know, you can have general markets that are oversupplied and still have areas within them that have opportunity to add new supplies. It's a very unique asset class from that standpoint, in that you really are a micro market and you need to analyze as such. And so the opportunities really need to be looked at with a knife and not a broad brush.
When it comes to that pricing, and you're saying that theoretically they could move like airline prices, it takes a while to build or to bring new product online, right?
In some areas, it's quicker than others. But yeah, generally speaking, I mean, just to build one is 12 months. Generally, you know, to get CDs up and running is 6 to 9 months, along with closing the land. So it's not a quick process by any means. You know, we have entitlements for a couple of our projects that will run 2 years. So before we even close on a property, it could be 18 months, another 6 months after that, and then you build it 12 months after that. And then it can take 2 to 3 to 4 years, depending on how big the property is and where it's located and the density around it, to actually fill it up. So, I mean, that can be a 6, 7, 8 year process altogether at the long end of it. But I don't expect supply to hit anytime soon, having kind of already come through the bottom of that last cycle. But that's the way the self-storage industry works. It ebbs and flows in those big movements because it does take time for supply to turn in either direction.
And in your opinion, we are undersupplied generally across the markets, or is it really, again, looking at it from a knife, like you said, taking a knife and not a broad paintbrush?
What had happened is, so from 2016 to 2020, you had deliveries, which, you know, they compound each other because it takes time for them to fill up. So deliveries in 2016 and 2019, they were still on the back end of getting filled up in some cases. So you had this compounding effect of all this supply that had impacted the market. But what happened with COVID was an enormous amount of demand was created. From what we can tell at this point, at this time, is structural demand. Basically, the way it worked is June 1st, 2020, you had for the most part, like the harshest of lockdown restrictions ended. And that was basically the starting point of when prices started increasing and haven't stopped since. Normally you see seasonality and prices decline in the winter. Last winter, you saw prices continue to go up. And that's because people are moving. They're moving from the city to the suburbs. They needed a spare bedroom at home. And so they needed to put their stuff somewhere for an office. One of the great things about storage, there's so many different reasons why people use it that there's no one reason I can point to other than just general pandemic change of lifestyle created enormous demand. And so if you can think about the 2016 to 2020 supply that was created, a lot of that was absorbed. So from that standpoint, now we're in a position where prices are up a lot, supply has been absorbed, and we're off to the next bull cycle in self-storage. So it's in terms of when you want to be delivering new product to the market. Again, this is a high level macro comment, and some areas you still don't want to deliver product to, and you have to know where those are. But this is, you know, the beginning of the next cycle.
That is really intriguing. You hear all sorts of things. I mean, in regards to storage being a recession resistant asset, things like that. I mean, do you think that bull cycle could change if we do have a recession? Will it pull back, or how would that affect it?
If we look at the last three or four recessions, storage has just crushed it through all of them. And again, that goes back to the core principle of the demand drivers for self-storage are so diverse, right? So obviously, if employment goes down, that means incomes get hit, and there are adverse effects to tenants that may have been impacted there. But to the same extent, you have people that get foreclosed on, they move out of their house, they move into a smaller apartment, whatever it is. That does create demand that partially offsets it. Nothing's recession proof, but I think it's somewhere around, I think if I use public storage as a proxy, I think their NOI declined 5 or 6, maybe 7. I think it was only 6 quarters in the Great Recession. It was revenue growth or NOI. Regardless, their top line numbers only declined for 6 quarters, and then they were off to the races again. It's proven itself to be very recession resistant, and that's just a function of diverse demand.
As a developer, what's your long-term plan? Or develop it and hold it? Or are you going to sell it off to the bigger players in the space once you have them built?
We're closed-end. Our first fund that we raised a $50 million closed-end fund. So we technically have to give our investors their money back. My personal goal is to continue to keep as much of my equity in everything that I do in self-storage for as long as I can. It comes back to the business model of it just being a phenomenal asset class. And we are finding the best locations in the country. So why would I, when it takes 10 to 15 years to truly stabilize an asset, why would I sell that asset if I don't have to and would rather continue to ride that asset and gather it into a larger portfolio? Because portfolio premiums do exist. So there will be an exit, I assume, at some point. Don't know what that looks like, but might as well keep the best locations we're finding across the country for as long as possible.
Raising a $50 million fund, I know you mentioned early on that it was challenging out of the gate to find people willing to take a chance on giving a group of people money that don't have a track record. How was that like, or what was that like, and how'd you overcome that?
Well, we had a group of really great investors that came in for our first close. We hit the road August 1st, 2020. The only real benefit to that was that everyone was at home and no one had anything to do. So we got meetings with everybody that took our call. So that was great. I think the team we did put together and the trust that had already been established through a lot of those investors with my partner, Drew Dolan, created a path for us to be able to get that capital raise. You know, we have differentiated platform on the tech side. We have the experience and we had the trust. And that was the trifecta that allowed us to be successful. And originally, COVID was this kind of dark cloud over what we were trying to do because debt was, and we didn't know how we were going to get our deals financed in the summer of 2020.
Sure.
Turned out that didn't matter because by the time we needed debt, it was very much available. But yeah, I'd say that it was just kind of a unique dynamic of having a lot of trust with some really great people and a differentiated platform that we happened to be stepping into. Honestly, one of the biggest tailwinds that the industry had ever seen. This is the biggest bull market for self-storage we've ever seen. Hands down, there's no comparison. The industry does cycle, so there have been other bull markets, obviously, but you've never seen inflection in demand like we've seen over the last 18 months. And so that takes a lot of credit as well. It was a lot easier to sell people with the idea of, hey, this is the best performing asset class, and it continues to just get better throughout the raise. So we had a lot of tailwinds in our back as well.
Absolutely. Why did you guys decide to do development versus finding existing assets or existing portfolios of assets and just implement some sort of value add strategy on those?
The main reason was it's where we had the ability to create the most value, right? There are rounded 50,000 self-storage facilities in the country. So by nature, there are some people trying to buy, and right now, trying to buy existing self-storage facilities is a very hot business. So even if you know which 2,000 are the best self-storage facilities, you're going to be competing with other people that just happen to fall on them and are bidding against them, right? So our competitive advantage, well, we can definitely have a competitive advantage from a tech standpoint. The order of magnitude on the development side to know what parcel of dirt we should be purchasing and to build a self-storage asset, the opportunity there is much greater, because it's much more difficult to know where that parcel exists versus one out of the 50,000 that is already operating and existing and has created a lot of value. It was the biggest value creation we thought we could bring out of the gate. And the spreads between what you could develop at and where cap rates are enormous if you find the right dirt. The prerequisite is that you have to have the right team that knows the entitlement process, the construction process, and that. And luckily, we did.
That's fantastic. And then I guess one other question on the build side. Are you guys, and I know you said this earlier, you might find that in a 3-mile radius that 10 by 10 units are renting for $250. I mean, is that a sign to you that says, hey, we should go in and build more 10 by 10 units?
Well, that's a function of what that price is relative to the other side. You want to take a 10 by 10 and convert it to a price per square foot. So a 10 by 10 is 100 square feet. So if the price is $250, it's $250 a square foot. Generally speaking, the smaller units go for higher dollar per square foot. We found in one of our markets, the 10 by 15s had a higher price per square foot relative to the 10 by 10s. So in that case, that's the indication that gives us the signal that we should be altering the unit mix when we are at that decision phase towards maybe 10 by 15s. And there's market research that goes into that. Well, you know, we visit every facility in our trade area and have discussions with the managers who really have a great insight of the long-term history of like, what do people use in this area? Because it is one area could be very different from another. There's not a lot of people using 10 by 15s in Manhattan, a lot of 5x5s, 4x5s, like really small units. So every area is unique, but you really want to think about what you're building, not just on an absolute basis, but what's the price relative to the other units. And that's going to give you, again, a good indication of what supply and demand is for that unit in that market.
Do you guys have any facilities live right now, or everything's still under construction?
Just under construction. I'm waiting, watching the clock. Can't finish soon enough. But right now we have a handful that are under construction. So they'll be completed here in 2022.
Right. Yeah, I think I saw on your website there, you're building some very large facilities. That's a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing those come online and see where you guys take this business. Looks like you've got the right pieces and the right players in place. So we'll keep our eyes peeled and ears tuned in to what you guys are doing. This has been a blast, Corey. Thanks for coming on today. I've got a few questions to wrap up the show here. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
One mistake in real estate. I mean, it's all along the due diligence path. And I think what we've found from our perspective is making sure that you understand where your utilities are, because sometimes they're not marked correctly on the survey. Call and verify your utilities before you take the title for face value. That would probably be the biggest thing I'd do at this point. Now, I'll preface that and say my actual dirt experience is limited at this point to this fund. So I don't have a long history there, but that's definitely one lesson I would pass along today.
Very good. Next question for you. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I'm investing in getting my kids involved in jujitsu. They're humble, respectful, and good kids.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. There's no higher calling than being a good parent. So that's absolutely great. Corey, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or with DXD, what is the best way to do that?
email me, Corey, C-O-R-Y, at dxd.capital, or come to our website, dxd.capital, and there's ways to get in touch with us there.
Awesome. Corey, thanks so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.